Jake.
What's up, man?
You know how last week we were kind of talking about like portals to different dimensions and stuff like that?
Yeah. I feel like we're still going to reference that episode next episode as if this one hadn't been recorded yet for some reason.
I don't know. That's kind of like one of those weird timeline thingies, you know, where everything's getting kind of mixed around. But I just have a question for you.
What's up?
What's that portal thing over there?
What, over there?
Over there.
That one?
Yeah, that one. That wasn't there yesterday.
Really? It's been there for me for like 3 days. I just haven't questioned it anymore. Well, like, at first I was worried about it, but now I'm just like, whatever. What's the worst that's gonna happen, right?
Well, where do you think it goes?
I don't know.
Wanna find out?
Sure?
Alright, let's go. Oh my god! It's Arcane 4!
You're in my basement.
Yeah.
Okay. I made this portal.
Well, can I ask you a question? Why'd you make this portal that just appeared in our house, and why did it take us 3 days to come through it? And where did you find enough magic to keep a portal open for 3 whole days?
I mean, firstly, Arcane Forge. So that's where you get the magic from, right? It's not just a name.
You know, I feel like
arcane stuff is my whole deal, and we're in my basement because, I mean, I get bored sometimes, and I thought I'd summon you guys here. 3 days worth of travel. I was not predicting that, I'll be honest. So you guys might want to use a shower or something, because like, it has been 3 days. I mean, I don't have toothbrushes or anything. Like, we're in a basement, so.
Oh, no extra toothbrush. Did you bring your toothbrush?
It's his basement.
Yeah. I'll see what I can rustle up, but I mean, it's not going to be good.
Huh. Hello and welcome to Travelers Tips and Tales.
Hi, thank you for having me.
My name is Ben.
And I'm Jake.
And joining us today, our buddy Josh from Arcane Forge. Welcome.
Hi.
Yeah, I guess you should be welcoming us.
Yeah.
Special episode from Arcane Forge's basement, apparently.
Yeah. So, first of all, thank you for coming and joining us on today's podcast. We're here to talk about a very interesting topic. But first, tell us a little bit about Arcane Forge and about yourself.
Okay, yeah, sure. As you say, my name's Josh, and I run a YouTube channel called The Arcane Forge. I'm an illustrator, and I like to make massively way too in-depth videos about monsters from Dungeons & Dragons while I illustrate them. And,
I enjoy it.
I appreciate that. It's really fun, and I basically get to combine all of my favorite ultra nerdy hobbies into something that people tune into on a Monday, and I'm really, really glad of that. So, and it got me here as well, into this lovely basement. So, yeah.
Well, I will say, out of all the sloppy basements I've seen, I feel like this is a pretty nice sloppy basement, you know?
Thanks, man. Yeah. I didn't clean it, but I...
Well, that's the magic with it, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, well, that's just prestidigitation for you. Like, I can clean it in a 5-foot square at a time. So, yeah.
See, I think it's kind of different, though, because basements over in the UK have, like, a purpose. You know, they could be, like, a wine cellar, or they could be storage or something, or they could be, like, a lounge. But in the United States, people are like, I have a basement. You're immediately like, oh, they're a murderer.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the thing as well. Like the UK being, like, all of our homes being so old in the UK compared to the States, like, all the houses are all, like, lovely and new and stuff. Like, there's for sure ghosts in here. So, like, that's, like... There's just been enough people living in these houses for long enough that there's bound to be at least one. So,
yeah, but that doesn't make it bad though. Like, you could just
it's not bad.
I mean, chilling, you know.
Yeah, I've never seen a horror film that's not turned out pretty well for at least someone. Mostly.
I mean, even if everyone dies at the end of the horror film, the ghost still gets its house back. So,
yeah, exactly. It's been about property the whole time.
Yeah, they had it first, you know, finders keepers, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only problem with that is eventually there's not going to be any more houses because all the ghosts will have taken all the houses.
Oh, man.
And you can't even build it on the site of a house that's not there anymore, because then you get situations like Native American burial grounds where it's just like, oh, that's haunted.
Yeah.
It just exists. It's haunted.
How do you reckon ghosts feel about trees? Can you build like a really good tree house? Maybe we should just do that.
I think that's probably one of the best options, honestly.
Hmm.
Unless there's like a ghost dog that was like buried at the base of the tree, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe they might get a bit
I feel like dogs would be cool about it, though. I don't think you'd get many horror films with like... I mean, Cujo. Cujo is the exception, but that means that there is a rule for that to be an exception, too. And, like, Cujo's a living dog, so ghost dogs are probably totally chill.
Yeah. Ghost dogs. I can't imagine a ghost dog would have any issue. Although, they might pee on your tree.
There is that.
So, that aside... This is a thing we ask everyone that comes on the show. What is your experience with Dungeons & Dragons, and do you have a preferred edition?
I definitely do have a preferred edition, although kind of like Skyrim, I have modded it to hell. So, so 5th edition, right, for sure, for me, is my favorite edition. Okay. Because it is a nice merger of... Basically, I've played 2.5... editions. I played a kind of slightly more coherent, slightly de-Gygaxified version of first edition, called Adventurer Conqueror King, that was released by Autark. And that's the edition that I had played the most until I started playing fifth edition. I played this mystery edition that happened like after third but before fifth, and I think it's just been someone wish spelled that out of existence, I'm sure. Either way, like, it's just a hazy memory. And then fifth edition, it kind of has all the stuff that, well, a lot of the stuff that I really liked from first edition, while discarding a lot of the stuff that I really disliked, and has a lot more kind of, it's a bit more video gamey, it's a bit more, it's less rules heavy, allowing you to fill in the gaps with what you like. And I feel like I tell the best stories that I can tell in 5th edition so far. Although I did enjoy my kind of version of 1st edition, although it did feel like a crushingly depressive medieval fantasy simulator. So, you know.
I mean, that just sounds like first edition D&D. So.
Yeah. Yeah, totally, yeah. Yeah, we don't talk about the Tomb of Annihilation.
But, yeah. Oh my god, speaking of Tomb of Annihilation, I realize we're off topic again, I don't care. Did either one of you ever get a chance to look at the really, like, enhanced... the special edition Art and Arcana book that was released for 5th edition?
I did not. No.
So it's a look back at all the older editions.
It had the old book covers.
I did,
right?
Actually. Yes. It had the original Tomb of Horrors in it.
Yes. Tomb of Horrors with all of Gary Gygax's notes.
Mm-hmm. I sent my players through that and it ended a whole campaign.
I'm not surprised.
We had like a really lovely campaign going full of characters that we all loved, and then I got that as a gift, and I was like, oh my god, this is so amazing, we should totally play through the Tomb of Horrors. And I thought the Tomb of Horrors was the Tomb of Annihilation, and was like, oh, that's gonna be really fun. And then we did Tomb of Horrors, and
no one had fun at all.
No, everyone really hated that, and we all just kind of agreed. We got like 3 or 4 rooms in, it was just like, I don't even want to play these characters anymore, I don't care what happens in their stories. It's just like, oh.
You've ruined the image in my head of this character.
Yeah,
my most
exactly,
beloved
yeah.
character is now dead to me.
Yeah, so we don't do that anymore.
It's okay. I've done that accidentally before I even knew what Tomb of Horrors was. I like killed everyone's enthusiasm about their characters, and they were all just like, we want to die.
Oh, no. Oh. That's such a shame.
And then we made new characters.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. I can't actually remember the time that Ben's referencing there. I don't know if I was a part of it or not.
I've done it a couple times.
Oh, okay. Cool. All right.
That's one of the things I find like really hard to wrap my head around, though, like the early editions of D&D being something that you're like, you make a character who goes from level 1 to level 3, and then that's it. You make a new character next time. And it's just like, but what? I'm emotionally invested in this person. Like, we have to keep going. I can't picture an edition of D&D now where it's just like, cool, you turn up, you play from 1 to 3, you get Fireball, and then you leave, and that character's done forever. Like, it seems so weird now to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the thing is about first editions and, like, AD&D, if you keep leveling, eventually you'll hit a point where the monsters are so difficult that one little disruption to your party and you stand no chance at all, or you're so godlike nothing can touch you.
Yeah, for sure.
One of those two things will happen.
Yeah, definitely.
So they weren't really designed to go that high a level. Fifth edition is pretty balanced for that.
Yeah.
Pretty balanced. I'm not going to say it's perfect, because there are classes where once they hit level 20, they are untouchable gods, and there are some that are just... Yeah. Level 20 and they're pretty cool.
Yeah, so, some of them, yeah. they achieve level 20 status, and then they're just like, the world of D&D is like, cool, here you go, here's a little gold star, look at you, you're a level 20 character, yay! And they're like, do I get anything? They're like, no, you're still garbage.
That's, you know, I kind of, like, I both love and I'm curious, I guess. I spend a lot of time thinking about that kind of stage, because I've never had a campaign where people have reached beyond like level 16, I think is the highest we ever got, and that was because of magical meddling and wish spells and stuff that leveled people up a little bit and stuff. I don't think the objective now of the game is to level up. I feel like it's to tell a story, and you are whatever level you end up being, and that's cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that whole feeling of like wizard at level 20 is like, cool, I can just choose what reality is now. And then the fighter is like, I've got a really good sword. It's sharp. And even if it wasn't, I know I could still do some decent damage with it. And then the wizard's just like, I could make it so swords never existed with a wish spell. Is it comparable? Probably not. But, like, how else do you make wizards, you know? That imbalance is kind of written into the fabric of this kind of story, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just being a level 20 spellcaster in general, it's just, it's over for pretty much anyone you run into. Or a level 20 rogue or a level 20 paladin are also really, really good.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what do you do?
But anyways, I promise listeners, we do have a topic for this
episode. We do have a topic today, and I think it's time we introduced it for real. So, today's topic, we are looking at the debate, the never-ending debate that has been happening since the late 1970s, theater of the mind versus visual aid when it comes to playing D&D, or role-playing games in general. So basically, do you describe the situations in, just let everyone imagine it in their heads, or do you have a cool battle map with minis and you go out and you build maps and battle areas and arenas and do you go the whole nine yards?
I mean, this could also be like edited for the recent Corona times, right? Because nowadays, all of our minis have dust on them. I'm pretty sure.
That's so sad.
And so it's so sad. I want to just like,
man, I was
get
so,
it all off. But,
we started a brand new campaign last year. Oh man, that seems horrible to say actually, last year. Mm-hmm. And I was so ready for this campaign. I got so excited. I like bought physical metal coins for everyone's gold and all this kind of stuff.
Oh.
That no one has ever touched because we have never actually met in person. We had to start online.
Yeah.
And like, I'm really into like, I guess what I will kind of call like 4D D&D. I like to give people maps, physical maps. And like when they find notebooks and stuff, I write out the notebooks on like tea stained paper and stuff. And if they, one of the things I really like to do is like, if they find a bit of a treasure map, I'll go out to like my nearest charity shop or what I guess you guys would call like a thrift store, mm-hmm. and I'll get like a really cheap puzzle and I will paint the puzzle and I'll draw the map on it, and then they'll get like little physical bits of puzzle that they have to like put together and all this kind of stuff. Cool. And I love miniatures and all this kind of stuff and battle maps, and I had all that prepped and I really wanted to throw it at my players, but we have not played in person.
It's so sad. But yeah, so in alternative to that, you know, for visual aid purposes, you could also substitute all of your really cool minis that I'm sure you have and have spent a lot of time and effort and money on. But you could also do things like, well, Roll20 has that. Just trying to like give out the alternatives early in the episode, so if anyone is here for that specifically they could take it and leave. But you know, like, you could use like things like Roll20 or even what we do, Ben, we just have a Google drawing that all of the players are shared to, and we have like little symbols that represent each of our characters, and then you just import maps onto that and we move them around.
That's a really cool idea.
Yeah. So, like, there is alternatives to visual aid. You don't have to, you know, just because we're in the digital era of playing D&D, you don't have to play Theater of the Mind, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
There are alternatives.
I personally like a little bit of a mix. Mm-hmm. Mostly, so I like to spend a lot of time on battle maps and stuff like that. I didn't always. For a really long time, I used to use just a little wipe away mat that was just kind of that kind of tea stained paper color, and I would draw like little bits here and there.
But the players can see.
Yeah, exactly, that kind of thing. But there's definitely like a dichotomy between what you as a DM are envisioning and what you have the vocabulary to describe, and what your players will experience. And I remember when I was first learning to play D&D, I was playing with some, you know, in these kind of like first edition campaigns, I was playing with some like old school kind of like 80s D&D players and stuff, and we played mostly Theatre of the Mind. Mm-hmm. And I remember just being super confused about where things were and what things were doing. Like puzzles in Theatre of the Mind are ungodly. Like, they, like, having, like, I remember that, I can't remember what sort of module we were using, but there was like a very, very long corridor, which we discovered had a like hallucinatory wall on one side, so you could pass through it but you didn't know until you touched it. The pathway was magically slickened, so if you stood on it you would be like kind of as if it was ice, you'd slide to the bottom. There was like a kind of punji pit or, you know, spike trap at the bottom.
Yeah.
And to add insult to injury, you couldn't fly in this corridor, and in order to basically, it was make a stealth check or make some kind of, you know, check, athletics or whatever his choice was. I can't remember what the DM's choice was, to grab a hold of a rope and to essentially climb along this rope. Otherwise, you basically fall in the pit.
Yeah.
And he'd really thought long and hard about how to make sure that we are on this rope. No questions asked. That is what you are doing. But the rope, the way it was described, was that it was going halfway through this wall at an angle, and it was like, what sides of this wall is it connected to? And none of us knew by the end of it. So we knew we were grabbing a hold of a rope and trying to climb somewhere, but we didn't know where the two ends of the rope were or anything, or what the size of this room was exactly. And part of that is, I'm sure, down to the DM being like just really excited about this trap, you know, because, you know, that happens. You get like...
Yeah.
You've been planning this encounter for ages. You know exactly what's in there. You're so excited. You want to just describe everything. Like, I want you guys to see what's in my head. And then you no doubt forget something really vital that is going to, that could, that has the potential to leave everyone in the party thinking that there are different puzzles, essentially, in this room. They have different things to overcome. And just having that clarity of, like, this is the exact issue you are facing right now, allows players to then think creatively about how they're going to get out of it and break the game.
You know? Yeah, you don't want to build up a a secondary wall that the players think that they have to get over when really they just have to like open a door or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But like I fully agree with that, and I also think it's terrible for like theater of the mind. Sometimes it could be confusing and hard on the DM to describe it perfectly. But also I feel like it puts on a little bit of extra pressure on the players, because at least for me, because I feel like my brain just works on a different radio wave than a lot of people, so sometimes during theater of the mind I won't understand something that everyone else in the party will. Yeah, just because of like how it's worded or something, and just like you know, my brain didn't go there, and and all of a sudden during combat I'm really confused, and my turn all of a sudden takes a lot longer because I'm trying to do something that I realize I don't have to do, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
And then, you know, it could be like a big waste of people's times or whatever. So, you know, and then it makes me feel like, oh, I kind of wasted everyone's time there because, you know, silly me, I mixed up my information or whatever, you know. So I think it could put a little bit of extra pressure on DMs and players, respectively.
For sure. At the same time, though,
that's like my biggest problem with Theater of the Mind.
Yeah, but I mean, it's also like on like playing. Playing kind of devil's advocate for it as well. There are kind of two main things that I don't want to just hand artwork to my players all the time as well, like, because I want to ideally use, like, describe something that they've never seen before. You know, in an ideal world.
That's a lot of art.
Yeah, for sure. But at the same time, like, and also I don't want to kind of, I'm always curious about what my players are imagining, because I know I describe something to my players, and I'm always curious to imagine what, like, see what their version of this world I'm making, what their version of this scenario is. And I also don't want to like intrude on that, because if you describe something that's totally non-immersive with their vision of the campaign world or this scenario, you don't want to have that moment of totally like bringing them out of the game, like de-immersing them basically with something that just doesn't work.
Yeah, I can understand that. What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, I can see where that would become kind of an issue. Like, if I personally have run into the issue of not being able to describe something perfectly, I don't have the words in my dictionary, my mental dictionary, to describe something the way it should be, and it's caused confusion. And then I've had people even get upset with me, like, you're not describing it good enough for me to understand it. And I'm like, sorry, like, I don't have the words.
My bad.
Yeah. I think the dumbest thing that's ever happened to me is I got in an argument with someone over the definition of a lake and a pond. The difference.
Oh my god.
No way.
Oh no, really? I'm having PTSD flashbacks.
Yeah, so I described it as there was a lake, like a frozen lake. They were in like a snowy Arctic area. They're in an Arctic forest. There's snow covering the ground. There's a frozen lake, right? You can see through the ice to the bottom of the lake. And he wanted to break through the ice and drop down and just walk along the bottom because he had armor that let him do that. And he did that, and I was like, okay, well, the part of the lake that you're at, you can still be seen from through the ice because you could.
It's not that deep.
It's not that deep. You could see straight to the bottom. And he's like, "Well, that's not a lake. That's a pond." And I was like, it's a lake because it's like 500 feet across. Like, it's really big." He's like, "That's still a pond because it's not deep enough." I was like, "Okay, you could have asked how deep it was before you just jumped in, though."
Yeah.
And And he was like, but a lake, I just assume because it's a lake that I can't see the bottom because that's what a lake is. And I was like, how am I supposed to know the difference between a lake and a pond is without actively looking into it? This is the dumbest argument I've ever had.
And then I'm on the corner of the table just like, guys, can I do this, please?
I don't know about you, though, if it comes to me not describing something and I'm actually getting like little flashbacks of like the first major controversy we've had in our campaign so far. But when it comes to me not describing something properly, and as long as too much time has not passed and too many people have not done things that have added on top of
the misunderstanding,
I will tend to just say, like, right, okay, do you want to retroactively not have done that? And we'll just, you know, now that we've cleared this up, you know, I'm not going to make your spells be gone. I'm not going to, you know, you don't have to be in that pond. You know, it's a body of water. I knew this word. We have a discrepancy about this word. Do you still want to have done that? Is kind of, as long as it's not like, someone's standing on top of your head.
Set that aside. This is what is the true, right?
Yes.
Like it's this deep, but it also has this circumference. So
yeah.
If that makes you happy, would you like to still go through the ice kind of a situation?
The pond versus lake thing is like actually a really good example for me, because I don't know about you guys, I'm trying desperately not to make this a tangent because there's so many things going on that I really want to say, but like okay, let me circle back to this. I'm gonna keep all these things floating in the air. So I don't know if Americans in general are more numerically minded. Or if I'm just really bad with numbers, okay? Because I know that, like, whenever I'm watching, like, trashy cop TV shows or something like that, they'll talk about someone being, like, 6'4", 180 pounds, or whatever it is. And it's just like, how the hell can you tell what that person's weight is? Like, we would never say anything like that. Just, like, we'd say maybe, like, heavy set or athletic or slim or, you know, anything. We'd never say, like, I don't know how heavy this guy is. What are you talking about? Like, how do I know any? I haven't asked him. Like, you know, like, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, exactly. How much do you weigh? Like, do you want my BMI? I'm just trying to rob someone. I don't like we don't really do that. And I'm bad at numbers. I don't know if that's just a thing. But when it comes to like the size of rooms and things like that, I will often say, there's an enormous ballroom. You can smell the lavender wafting from the nearby perfume oil lamps. Everything is gilded. And they'll go like, Josh, enormous. How big is enormous? Okay, I'll just Google something and then I'll get the image. Like, of like, okay, that's this size is the size we're talking about. Because I'll go like, because my first thought is always like, how big is the room I'm in? And then go like, because if I'm playing with D&D, I could say this many rooms worth. If we're in like across the world now, like we've got one guy playing in France right now. It's like, okay, you don't know where I am. You've never been to my dining room. So... it's this image. This is how big the room is. That is how big, but nothing like anything you can see on the screen. That's how big it is, but it looks like this, is roughly what I will do when I'm using kind of visual aids. Especially if it's like establishing an atmosphere, or in particular, yeah, definitely size. If you've watched any of my videos as well, like I will often say like some creature is like a certain number of giraffes stacked on top of each other's head, or like a certain number of Danny DeVito's long, because like I will know like that's about all I've got. Bad at feet and stuff, you know.
You know what, Ben, you could describe something with Danny DeVito's and giraffes and Americans would still understand it better than meters.
Petition, Ben. From now on in your games, I want you to describe things in lengths of giraffes and Danny DeVito's only. Thank you very
much. I'm so sorry, Ben. I'm so sorry. I've ruined your campaign.
Well, here's the thing. Americans will measure with literally anything except the metric system.
That's fair. Unless they're NASA.
Well, that's because they lost a satellite once because of that. That's the only reason they do that.
My goodness.
Because the company that made the thing for them used inches and feet, and NASA didn't bother to calculate the difference, and then they lost a Mars orbiter.
To be fair, like we vary a lot of the measurements that we use. Like if we're talking temperature, and I don't know if you guys do this as well, but certainly in the UK, like we'll always say when something is cold, we'll talk about it in Celsius, because it's like, that's how cold it is. Celsius, and then when you get to hot, we will probably switch to Fahrenheit, because like it's the surface of the sun temperature outside, and you're there. I'm there going like, are we still talking Celsius? Because that's like when steel boils. Like what are we talking about here? Like, you know, where are we? Why? Who is outside right now? Like,
I'm actually speaking in Kelvin.
Yeah, we should just measure in Kelvin.
Just screw everyone over. Like, we need to have our own D&D version of measurements, because I feel like that discrepancy, I don't know actually if they're published in different weights and stuff. I would be interested to know that actually, if like
are they written is the weights written in pounds, and is the lengths written in feet?
We've never done encumbrances in my campaigns, really, specifically because I'm so bad at dealing with things like that. At one point, we did stones and pebbles in terms of like how heavy something would be.
This amount of stones or this amount of pebbles?
Yeah. Rather than like stone as the weight.
The British will weigh with anything but pounds.
Yes. What is a pound? Like, it's just like I like, that's just money. What are you talking about? How many doubloons is that thing weigh? You know, it's pounds. Pounds is money. So, how many euros worth of weight is that? But
a lot. So most people.
Yeah, fair. But to be honest, what I tend to do is, as a DM, just go like, there's no bloody way that you are carrying that many things. Like, if someone has two swords, like two broadswords or something like that, they have to really be quite strong, you know, like they have to be 18 to 20 strength for me to be okay with them having like multiple big weapons. Mm-hmm. And unless they, I totally disregard the rules for the bag of holding and just go like, it's a hole, you can, as long as it fits in the mouth of that hole, you can fit anything you like in there. I don't care how heavy that is, because that's just now I don't have to care what's in there, and we don't have to pretend
space.
Like I know maths.
It's not on your person anymore.
Exactly. But like, the rules as written, bag of holding says you still deal with the weight of what's in there. And it's just like, well, what's the bloody point? Like, it's a bag of holding. I wanted Santa's sack. I don't want a bag of responsibility where I still have to pretend I know what maths is. Like, you know, like I clearly don't. I'm so dyslexic.
This
please
is
just let
to
me
be my scapegoat. Yeah. Not have to worry about this anymore.
This is why you have a bag of holding, because I specifically didn't want to care about this problem. Like, this is, you know, like, you'll notice that all the magic items you guys have got are things that I can't do and I don't want to care about anymore. That's why you can do all these things. Like, you know, like...
I will say, the only issue I have with my players carrying around so many bags of holding is the rule about extra dimensional spaces overlapping. I always, like, technically speaking, not too long ago in the game I run on Fridays now, one of the people should have been sucked into the astral plane along with their entire bag of holding, because they just jumped into a thing, and I was just didn't want to be that guy. So I was like, you know what, I don't care. I'll let it slide. They jumped into a portable hole, and they are the one that carries the bag of holding.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So technically speaking, the moment they did that, the portable hole, the bag of holding, they all should have been sucked into the astral plane. But I was like, you know what?
Was that me? I'm trying to think now.
No, it was Selfie.
Okay, I was going to say, I was like, I carried the bag of holding for a bit. Did I go in the portable hole? I was like, maybe.
I from over there, I was just like thinking, this is like, oh, that's the kind of chaos I like to cause. I thought that's why you're bringing that up. Well, just like, that seems like a me problem.
It would have been the second character of hers that would have gotten into the astral plane that way.
That would have been really funny to do that to Damon again.
Because the first time she did it was one of those theater of the mind things, like we've been talking about, where I was like, all right, so your stuff has been emptied of the bags, and it's all laid out on the table. She was like rescuing them. She was like, all right, I grab my bag and I throw everything in there. I was like, everything? She's like, yeah, everything. I was like, okay. So you start going through and you reach for something, you throw it in, and as you do, it just sparks, and she looks down and she was like, no, there was another bag of holding there, wasn't there? I was like, yes, there was. Oh, man. Okay, bye.
That's a good way to assassinate someone, actually, is to like make a tiny pocket of holding.
I've done it.
Just have you? No way.
I didn't assassinate someone. I killed a demon lord.
Killed, yeah.
And got my arms ripped off in the
lost
process.
Lost his arms.
Yeah.
So to stop from us having him die as well, we enlarged him a bunch so that he was really big. So yeah. That way, not most of his body was outside of like the 10-foot range. That's supposed to. Yeah. It's pretty great.
Oh, man. That was with one of my characters named Jabble Fabble, and I did it to save the party, but also. We were all told by the DM at the time that it wouldn't attack anyone except the guy who challenged it. And so we were like, okay, cool. But then the first thing it did was attack me. So I was like, all right, bet. I was like, so that was a lie then.
Yeah.
So that was. And then he gave a reason, but I was like, I get that you have a reason, but you stated the opposite. Doesn't matter. I think we should probably talk about the visual side, the model side, the terrain side of things.
Oh, God, I love a good bit of terrain.
So, terrain is awesome. Let's just
terrain is really
let's
cool.
just go ahead and all acknowledge that the reason we do the models and the terrains and the maps is not because we can't do without them. We can. Mm-hmm. It's been stated that we can. It's because they're awesome.
Because they're cool.
They're fun as well. And like, this is one of the things, like, I love miniature painting. I've done it for a really long time. I think we've all kind of talked about us having kind of like a background in Warhammer or some kind of war game, you know, to some extent. I don't know if you guys, did you guys start off playing war games and then go into D&D or... Yeah.
The other way around for both of us.
All right, okay, no way.
D&D into Warhammer.
For me, I was just, you know, oh, look at the shiny models. Got me into, basically got me into D&D. And, you know, I was always the arty kid in school, and I love painting stuff. And so miniatures, that was fated for me almost before I was born. You know, I was going to spend a lot of my paycheck on miniatures. Like that.
You were destined to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's my dark calling. But also, it's one of those things as well, because you can spend any amount of money on miniatures you want. It's going to be probably a lot. But when it comes to terrain, you can make that out of anything. And one of the things that I love most about D&D is that you can shovel, like a sphere of annihilation, you can throw all of your gold at it if you want to, and it will eat every single copper's worth. But you can also play the game for nothing. You can download PDFs of every single book. You can play Theatre of the Mind. You don't have to use terrain or anything like that. But if you do use terrain, like this past weekend, my wife and I spent the whole weekend in my kind of painting studio. And we built stalactites and kind of underdark terrain out of toothpicks and a glue gun and toilet roll and stuff like that. And it was just a fun thing to do together, and it cost nothing. Like, you can use aluminium foil to sculpt most stuff, and aluminium is the most abundant metal on Earth. Like, you don't even feel environmentally bad about it.
Yeah.
You probably do when you start using resin and stuff, but, like, making terrain is really fun. And, like... I don't know about you, but like the whole thing that I get out of being a DM, as well as getting to like make a fun story and all the stuff that we all know, the reason why I love being a DM is because I'm obsessed with gift making. I want to make something really cool, and I want to give it to all of my best friends. And there is nothing like spending a whole weekend or longer building a ton of terrain to basically give to your players and then get to use it for the rest of your life as well.
Yeah.
So like that kind of side of the visual aid, I think, is just so self-indulgent, but also such a gift that you can give to other people as well. It's just, yeah, I love it. I personally absolutely adore it.
If I may, though, on that same note, I know that was not the only thing you were painting in that room.
There was something in that room that cost probably a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, it did.
Oh, man. But, I mean, yeah, at the same time, though, there was probably some mini in there that was a lot of money. But, Ben, you know, we come from the era of whiteboards with with pre-drawn grids on them, so we don't have to draw the grids every time. Yep. And bottle caps and dice as That's minis.
Like, we would use... Oh my god! The biggest we found out
that a normal bottle cap is a 5 foot medium creature, and then like a Gatorade bottle cap is a large creature, and then just any can is a huge creature. So we'd have like bottle caps, and then over here would be like an Arizona can that's like really tall for no reason, and just then, because it's huge.
Don't forget the mayonnaise jar lid that was the 20 foot monster.
Oh my god.
This is Miracle Whip the Magnificent. And, exactly. Yeah, man.
But so, I mean, alternatively, if you don't think that visual aids are better just for your artistic reasonings, right? Because maybe you're not a good painter or you know, you're not hands-on and crafty, you know, visual aids are still accessible to you at a cheap cost, where it's just like, literally we would just like, every time we drink a water bottle and we'd about to recycle it, and then Ben would be like, ah, give me that cap.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's one of the best things about it as well, because you can recycle a lot of stuff. There's so much, like we pile up so much recycling and stuff, and so often I'm just like, I could save that box and turn it into something. Like, you know, that could be a castle if I get a few more toilet roll tubes and stuff. I like, that was always like one of my favorite things to do as a kid as well, like watching like Blue Peter and all these other like TV programs and stuff as a kid after school. It's always just like, right, how many yogurt pots do I need before the presenter tells me how we're making a rocket ship this weekend? You know, like that is like such a big part of my childhood. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like mostly because of disorganization, I have a Kickstarter edition, and I ended up, you know, addiction with, you know, with just tons and tons of miniatures. I ended up with loads and loads of miniatures that I had not unboxed. It was just this huge pile of gray plastic shame that I had not sort of like used as miniatures. So I owned all those things, but I was still doing the whole kind of like bottle caps and dice as minis thing. And I was only really doing that because there are people in your group who will be better and worse at visualizing everything as well. Mm-hmm. Like when I am DMing or if I'm playing D&D, I imagine you guys are probably the same, but I am just like wildly hallucinating everything. Like just, I am in that world. I can't even see our world anymore. I'm just seeing everything when I'm describing it. My wife, who is interestingly also an artist, but she is a graphic designer and kind of graphic designer turned illustrator. Okay. So whereas I'm like pure illustrator, she's multi-classed, obviously. she has a really hard time picturing anything. So she loves D&D, and we'd been playing D&D for like a year together. Before she went like, yeah, man, like I really appreciate it when you do the grid, because then I can see where I can hide and stuff like that.
Because I can't. Same way.
Really?
Cause yeah, I am your wife, to say it weirdly.
Okay.
To say it a weird way, I am the same way as your wife. Like I love the artistic part of it. I like seeing it makes my eyeballs go, ooh, that's nice. But then at the same time, I'm like, where are the grids? How far can I move? How far is me from that guy? I want to be able to count it myself so I don't have to worry you about, like, how far am I from this guy? Can I shoot him? Or, you know, will my spell reach him? Yada, yada. Mm. So, like, I'm the same way. I love seeing the really cool terrain and all that. But at the same time, I'm like, how far, though?
it does stop any discrepancies about that kind of stuff as well, because like if you have a player who I know I'm actually in this kind of like dicey situation at the moment with actually the guy who was my best man at my wedding. I have killed so many of his characters because he's the person he's the person in our campaign who always goes like, "Oh, that looks like a trap. I want to poke it." Right. So I have just murdered so many of his characters that he and I are on like you know that like, "Oh, we're pals." Don't kill any more of my characters, though, otherwise we are going to have issues. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like I totally understand. We totally get it. But we're both on thin ice, so just be delicate, all right? This character has to live for a while. Somebody else's character has to die first. And it's like, don't do stupid stuff, then.
It's 100% Ben and Michael.
Yeah, it's just like, I love you. Please don't, like, it's like, don't kill my character. Please don't make me kill your character. You know, just that,
putting your character in advantageous situations to die. Come on.
Yeah, man. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, it's like, is it real fire? It's just like, you really think it is real fire? I'm still going to stand in the fire. Please don't stand in the fire. I want us to be friends. Please don't stand in the fire. Like that kind of thing. But like having a battle map really does like clear up a lot of that stuff. Because if you're in that kind of like delicate situation where maybe you have had to penalize a player a lot because they've done what you think is stupid stuff, or you know, whatever, even maybe it's not stupid. Who cares? You're in a kind of delicate situation, mm-hmm. where the social dynamic of the group could be compromised by a player thinking that you are unfairly targeting them.
Yeah, right?
And you're doing theater of the mind, and it's just like, cool, I want to run up to this thing. It's like, ah, oh, you're too far away. Or you know, this I want to shoot this thing. I'll be behind a pillar, so like you're gonna have disadvantage to shoot from that, like. They will be more inclined to think that you are penalizing them over other players unless there is something concrete on the table that says this is exactly where you are. So,
and then they can reference it and see like, oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And I think as well, like, Theatre of the Mind works really well if you have players who also interact with Theatre of the Mind. Like, if they are also kind of approach it like an actor. Like, we have a couple of actors in our D&D group. And I'm confident that if I went Theatre of the Mind and I said, like, there's a huge demon over here, you're in this dwarven mine that's been abandoned because the demon's eaten them all, I don't know, and blah, 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 you know, the full scene description. Mm-hmm. I like those of them that have played D&D for a really long time or who are actors and are used to improv will go, okay, are there any giant pillars that I can go and hide behind? And I will go as a DM, yes, totally there is. Or they will say like, okay, are there any corpses of dwarves around that I can go and hide behind or fling at this thing? It's like, totally, great. Yes, you're helping build the scene. You go and do that. But the people who are not used to that or whose minds, again, like my wife, maybe doesn't work like that and needs to have the input put in there, they need something to hide behind, you know, otherwise they're just sitting in a room with a massive demon going like, hi, how's it going, please don't eat me. You know, like,
hi, I'm Bob.
Exactly. I'm vulnerable to fire like and axes. Yeah, it's just like, so you I think it really depends on the type of group you have, and I don't want to say that those people are worse at play or anything like that, because I think honestly I have a theory that the people who need more instruction in D&D are more prolific readers, and the people who are better at improv in D&D are more prolific gamers. At least in my head, from the limited stock of information that I have access to, because I know my wife and the other people in my group who need a bit more like description of where things are and would prefer having, you know, like a battle map with everything modeled out, are like voracious readers, and to them, like, because you know, when you're reading a story, you get all that information, and if anything comes up that's relevant to the plot, because you know this has gone through editors and editors and editors, and any superfluous information has been cut from it, so why would you be being told about pillars that aren't there, that aren't useful, you know? Specific
they're there for a purpose.
Yeah, exactly, they serve the plot. And if you are, you know, more used to like I guess improv or playing video games where your job is to observe the environment and like act accordingly, you're gonna go like, right, is this, how can I make this advantageous to myself, rather than I am now dealing with the situation you've put me in. It's like, I'm gonna try and work with the situation. So that, like, I think, like, you have to assess your party in terms of what approach you lean on more heavily between Theatre of the Mind and visual aids, I guess. Have you guys found similar sort of stuff?
I kind of agree, actually. That's an interesting thought that I had never, that had never occurred to me before. The people that need it are the people that maybe don't actively think about, okay, how can I mess with this thing all the time?
Yeah.
Totally. Like, for example, I know some of the people that love Theater of the Mind are some of the people that love just messing with things. They're the people that are just like the what ifs. Like, well, what if it was on fire? It's not, but what if it was?
Yeah, totally.
Can we make it on fire? And I've also found that the people who, aside from the hardcore war gamers who fall outside of both categories, the people who love the visuals are the people that maybe we need a little bit of help getting into D&D in the first place.
Yeah, or maybe
are a little bit inexperienced with just making things up on the fly.
I mean, I would agree and disagree, because I put myself in the, I guess I wouldn't say need, but I prefer it, much prefer it most of the time, of visual aids. And I would argue that I very much am like that, where, like, you know, what if it was on fire? Or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's just like, sometimes I feel like, well, because, like, even improvisational, like, you see what your surroundings are. And sometimes it's I think it's more based off of, like, are you a visual learner, or are you, you know, a different type of learner, like a hands-on or whatever, right?
I think as well, like, part of it is going to be your storytelling as a DM. Because, like, if you think about how you've been telling the story up until this point, have you given people opportunities to think in the Theatre of the Mind way? So, like, personally, as a DM, I tell very, like, I don't want to say linear stories, but, like, I'm telling a story that you guys are living in. And you can make your own decisions in that story, and you can totally derail it if you want to, but it's not a sandbox. You know, I'm telling you a like, I'm writing a book, basically, that you guys make big choices in, and you can totally, like, basically, essentially come back to me with cliff notes and say, actually, you know, all that stuff you did, we're going to go over here instead. And I go, like, cool, I'm going to react to that, and, you know, I'll start writing now in that direction that you have caused the story to go in. But if you start with a sandbox where it's like, cool, tell me where you're going, tell me how you do this, tell me what you want to do, here's the world, I've made some lore, you guys go. I think if you start off and have been playing a campaign, been writing a campaign with that in mind, I think that's going to lean more towards the Theatre of the Mind, where people can come up with whatever they want and tell you what they want to do in this fight and so on. But if you're telling a more linear story, which linear always comes across as bad, maybe that's not the word I'm looking for, but, like, you know what I mean? Like, a kind of, like, a book-esque story, I guess, a book adjacent, kind of choose your own adventure rather than, you know. There are finite options in this world that you are creating. I think those people are going to need more visual aids, because you are, the impression that they've been given from the start of the campaign up until this point, whether it's now an issue, is going to be, I have presented everything to you. What do you do with the stuff that I have been giving you? As opposed to, you know, you are also helping me build this scene. What do you do in it? And how do you help furnish that scene by stuff that you come up with? So I think it's really also to do with the way you've been storytelling up until the point where people get a choice of Theatre of the Mind, you know?
Yeah.
If I may, I think I might have a solution to both sides of the argument. Cool. And this is something I did that turned out really, really cool. Jake was there for this. So
apparently I was.
So what I like to do is I have this mat. It's a wet erase mat. So I have the markers and then you just wipe it off with a wet towel when you're done. And what I'll do is, whenever they get into a room, I'll describe it as I'm drawing it out. So they that can see it and hear me describe it. And then this is a little bit of me being kind of an I used to do improv and I used to do acting. Oh. So what I'll do is I'll kind of gauge the excitement levels of the people I'm talking to. And I'll be like, do they want more stuff to mess with? Because I know one of my players that I used to have all the time, he loved having environmental stuff to just mess with. Like, he loved, I think he said one of the most fun encounters, it was a boss fight in a room and the walls were lined with rusty spikes.
Yep.
And he would, he would just start throwing people against the wall.
That's really cool.
And he was wearing like full plate armor, so he was just like, all right, let's go, I'll tackle you into the wall, I don't care. So in this environment, they were, they interrupted like a ritual by a bunch of like succubi that were trying to summon this thing. And because Jake's character just has a bow that shoots and it opens up a hole in walls that normally are not there.
Random, it was really enchantments. So, thanks, Gorman.
slight off rail, but this dungeon I had taken my girlfriend and her party through, and they were like level two, I think. Level one or two. Gosh. And then I had Jake, his character Cade, and another friend of ours, his character's named Kasonu, go through. They're level 20. And so they are going through and they're seeing like the aftermath of what happened here after they the level ones and twos had cleared it out.
It's just really funny because our characters come up to this dead end and we're like, well, what's on the other side of the dead end? And we're like sitting here for a second where obviously their party just turned around, you know, because they can't make their own hallways and whatnot, nerds. But but where we were just like, well, let's find out. And so I shoot the wall and then like I open up this big hole and then all these succubi turn to us and they're like, you weren't supposed to be able to do that. And we
start
just kind of like
the hands like, that's not what I summoned.
And we just kind of like shrugged our shoulders and we're like, well, this is what we're doing now, all right.
So what I did was I described this room as like it had like four braziers that were like had lit flame in them and they had metal spikes on each one. And that is what our friend really latched onto. And he was like, metal spikes. Yes. And there was like this big statue in the middle and all that on the middle of the room. And so they get in there and they start fighting. And I started doing a thing. Every time they would hit like a solid hit, I would take my little red marker and I'd draw blood splatter on the floor.
Yeah, it was great.
And then
there was
he
this
eventually,
one part. Oh god,
he managed to grab one of the succubi and prevent it from getting away because he had these gloves that were gloves of counter spells. So if you tried to use spell casting to get away, he would just counter it immediately.
So perfect.
Yeah, so the succubi can't phase away, and he drags her over to one of the braziers, and like I drew the trail of blood that they had gone through because they're actively bleeding, and just smashed her on
it was
the
great.
Spikes.
It was great and because it was a fighter and a rogue, so like the fighter, all of the like blood from the fighter damaging things was just like little trickles here, like splatters and splashes and whatnot, and then and then for my hits, it was just like I hit one thing and I like insta-killed it because I have so much sneak attack. So man. Ben just like made this like big like splatter of just like something happened here.
And then like so he like smashed her onto the spike and it dealt like a little bit of damage, but because it was lit flame, it like started to burn and he was like, yeah, I'm satisfied with that. And then he moved on to the next thing and I just drew like this big puddle. Right, and it was so cool because at the end you could see the splatter of like what happened.
It was
in this
like
room.
It was like the story of our combat. Like if like told the timeline. It was kind of cool.
Unfortunately, no pictures exist anymore.
Nope.
And it was, I mean, that's probably for the best because I feel like
they also had like a boss fight for any immediately reason. Afterwards. So yes. Then there was the blood splatter
then,
from all the
boss. Then it was all of our blood all over the place. We like barely lived. I'm not gonna lie.
I think
that was kind of a close.
That's good. That's good DMing right there. Barely lived, but lived is what
you're keyword like, lived.
Yeah, like that's like I felt so pleased recently because I'd set up I've kind of set up my campaign this time with a bit more free range of choice in it, so people choose the missions that they want to do, and people like they're kind of like PIs where people come to them and like offer rewards in exchange for missions. You know, they have their home base type thing. And there was a I called it the Night in the Supernatural History Museum, where a bunch of hags had taken over a natural history museum and were using the latent magic in stored in ancient items to like open a portal to multiple dimensions and stuff.
Awesome.
That's neither here nor there. The important thing is a character died, which is not what I wanted to have happen, but like a character lost both of their eyes. Someone like was burnt to a crisp, but still managed to just about survive. People lost limbs. Like they survived for the most part, but they crawled out of that natural history museum on their bloody stumps that were their fingers. And they now have stories to tell and they have some stuff to do in terms of finding out how to get someone new eyes. So like it's like I that is going to shape a character and is like your indication as a DM that you've got the challenge rating just right. That's like you know, we're going to pick our battles rather than just run screaming, unless you're a barbarian, run screaming in and like just tackle the nearest thing you can find. I love that kind of thing. So that is, I mean, if Ben, if you were the DM there, it sounds like you did an amazingly good job of like keeping them alive by just the fibers of their tendons.
The thing I was most proud of is that by the end, I got 2 level 20s to go. I think this is bigger than us. I think we should go.
No way. Wow. Yep. No, that is good.
100%.
I forgot they were level 20.
Because they fought the boss fight.
He did one key thing. He cornered a frightened rogue with not a lot of hit points, with something that had a lot of reactions. So I couldn't get away from it. And I was just like, I got a chance where I was away from it. I was like, time to leave.
Yeah, you guys just about almost killed it, and then like you guys were both on your last legs, I think, and then it rolled on that one and cracked the statue and then looked at it in fear because it started leaking this like gas, and then you guys are like,
we were just like, nope.
Yeah,
nope.
And then like three more of the thing you just fought showed up, and then started praying to the statue, and then the statue came to life and killed them all because it was angry,
and then it looked at us and we were like, bye bye.
It's just like, that is a problem for someone else, right?
Man, I'm looking at my health HP count here, and it says it's time to leave.
I really love the kind of like meta knowledge in D&D about health, just like the kind of like on a scale of 1 to 52, I'd say I'm about 3 healthy. I don't want to say like there's some sort of health bar above my head, but were I to be in a level of danger between 1 and 53, I would certainly say that I'm quite low. Definitely not giant statue demon worthy.
John, I fully agree.
Yeah, that stuff is great.
But yeah. So I guess I'm kind of in the middle, right?
Yeah.
So like I like visual aids because I want to be able to know like how far I am from things and is, you know, where is stuff to hide behind and yada yada. Mm. I want to be able to see that. But at the same time, the point, like the type of visual aid that I most prefer is that one that Ben described, where it's just like this wet erase mat. We all use like, you know, bottle caps and whatever to represent ourselves. And we draw on it as we go. And the drawings, trust me, Josh, they are not good. They're just squares and circles and triangles. So at the same time, I myself am still theater of the minding the encounter, because, you know, obviously I'm not in a perfectly browned room, paper colored room.
Depends how much dry blood is there.
You know, obviously I'm not in a paper colored room with a bunch of squares on the ground, and there's a cube over there, a perfect cube, and over here is a triangle, and over here is a circle. No, I'm, you know, I'm in, like Ben said, like I'm in this stone cavern. And there's a statue in the center with a bunch of lip razors with spikes on them. So, like, I myself as the player see that in my brain, but obviously with my eyes, I see a bunch of squares, rectangles, triangles, and whatnot.
For sure. And I get the impression that that's something that has maybe happened since D&D began. Because, I mean, I always wonder, I mean, I know about the miniature of the boule and it looking like a bullet and stuff, but creatures like the boule and certainly the gelatinous cube, a large part of me wonders, did Gary Gygax just literally get a cube of jelly from the fridge and stick that on the D&D table? It's like, that's what you're fighting.
And then everyone at the table's like, what?
Yeah, just like, is that raspberry jelly? It's like, yeah, well, in our world, yes, but it's dangerously acidic in your world. You know, like, I wonder if that's just like, I need a boss encounter. What have I got in the fridge? Like, it's just, oh, it's a banana. I wonder how much that has shaped the game and if that kind of stuff has happened. Because, like, before I realized there was a miniature of the boule that kind of inspired the boule's existence, I wonder if it was just like, yep, yeah, got some bullets nearby, just put them on the table, that's what you're fighting.
That's what you're fighting. There you
does
go.
It have legs? Sure, yeah, yeah, it has legs. Guess. Why not?
I mean, I suppose it shouldn't not have legs, so
yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, yeah, there's no wizards nearby, so I guess
like, you know, to make this a thing. Reasonable threat, I suppose. Yes, it does have legs, but then the funny thing is the same thing happened with the gelatin, where he just put the jello on the table and they were like, does it have legs? And he was like, no, not this time. It just kind of it just kind of moves around.
That's absurd. Why would jelly have legs?
Like, what is wrong with you? Obviously, it's a perfect cube. Duh.
Yeah, clearly, just like nature intended. Like,
why not? It's got a bunch of like skeletons and stuff inside it too. Why not? Yeah, it's got a random sword or shield or whatnot.
That would be a really good way to deal with, like, you know, if you have one of those players who like always brings a lot of food to the table and then spills it over the table, because like, or like someone spills like their Coke on the table and just like, well, this black stuff goes all over these miniatures that you've just painted and stuff. Just like, well, that's a black pudding now. So wherever that touches is the circumference of a black pudding.
Oh my God.
That's what you're now dealing with. I want, you know, I wonder how often that kind of thing's happened.
It's probably more times than we think.
Yeah.
And we already think it's a lot, so.
Some malevolent Cheetos dust demon has now coalesced on the table because you didn't wipe your hands before you picked something up.
Oh, I hope that's a thing. I hope that exists. As a good
I'm
thing.
Gonna make it if it's not. So. Coming to a Monster Monday near you, Cheetos dust demons. That's gonna be a thing.
I will happily work with you on that.
Yes, please. Yeah. Oh man. Oh boy. If you had to, like, you know, Vorpal sword to your neck, pick between theater of the mind and visual aids, which one would you have to pick?
Well, Josh, I just said that I picked both like 10 minutes ago.
Well, you've just been decapitated, mate. Sorry.
That's true.
Straight out.
I feel like there is a happy medium that most people can find in their groups.
Mm. Yeah.
I personally, I think, would lean towards visual aid, because yes, it's expensive, yes, it's a lot of work, yes, you have to store all those models and minis, but that's just the kind of play that I think is kind of like the cultural thing.
Mm-hmm. There is alternatives to it. Yeah,
there's alternatives, but I feel like that's what people like, and I like it. Yeah. And I get that,
and it's
why
it's a part
like
of the game, you know.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
There's nothing like better than Ben calling me up on a random day of the week, and he's like, hey, Jake. I'm like, what? And he goes, guess what? I go, I don't know. I can't read your mind. What do you want? And he goes, I just got something in the mail. And I go, ooh, what is it? And he goes, it's a mini. And I'm like, ooh. Yeah. And he goes, you want to see it? And I'm like, yeah. And then we hang out for the whole day just because at the beginning of the day, he said, I have a miniature to show you. And I was like, I'm in.
the only problem, like, as a DM with miniatures, I think, is when you get really excited about a miniature that you've just got, you have to make sure that everyone knows that it's nothing to do with your plot, because I always post, like, I'm painting this massive Cthulhu, like toddler-sized Cthulhu right now. And
that may or may not have been what I was referring to earlier. Yeah.
It's honest to God, like, the biggest miniature I've ever seen. I don't think you can class it a miniature anymore. But, like, all of my players are absolutely weeing themselves, because they're just like, what have we done? When's this gonna kill us? And it's like, no, it's not gonna happen. It's not gonna happen.
Josh, I didn't mean it. I swear. Yeah, exactly. Please don't do it.
Whatever I did, I'm sorry.
Yeah, just
Ben,
like, we need
is
to check
the
if Josh
worst
is okay.
At that. Ben is the worst at that, because he'll just randomly buy this mini, and it'll be like this huge dragon, and we're just like, what? Why? And he's like, oh, I just thought it looked cool. And I was like, okay. And we're all just, like, crossing our fingers behind our back, like, please, please, please. And then there's other times where he's just, like, he buys this mini, and we're like, oh, that looks really cool. It's super scary. And he's like, yeah, can't wait. And we just look at him like, oh, God, no.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And then we start thinking, like, what game is he going to use this in?
No, I think that's yeah. It's one of those things, because, like, you really want to share your excitement with everybody, but at the same time, you, like, the fear and, like, like, all these plot twists. Just like, is this where there's loads of vampires, Josh? It's like, no, you're into vampires. I know you've been converting things into vampires. Is this where we're going to find a lot of No, damn it. And now I have to just scribble that part out of the notes, and it's just a lot of very tall goblins now. You know,
nothing to see here. Just three kobolds and a trench coat.
Exactly, yeah. Like, so you have to, like, run that happy medium of, like, not spoiling your own campaign by showing everyone you're excited about your minis.
On the flip side, though, if I buy a mini and everyone's like, oh god, and then somebody's like, is this when this is happening? What's in the bag? What's happening? I'm like, I don't know. And then I'll just pull it out, and then they'll just freak out because they were right.
The one person that was out of the loop that didn't see the mini yet, they're just like, oh no. And we're like, I know, right? We're done for, my guy.
Where I used to live, I used to have, like, my kind of, like, painting area. It was like our flat was like a long corridor. At the very far right hand side was our dining room, where we played D&D, and on the left hand side, as soon as you came in, was where I painted all my minis and stuff. And so everyone used to really slow down as they were coming in the front door, going like, okay, the demons are all still there, the undead are still there. Oh no, where's the archfey? The archfey are not there right now.
You know what's funny, though? So they do that, and they get comfortable because, like, the biggest thing isn't missing, right?
Yeah.
But then as you're DMing and whatnot, you'll be like, I'll be right back. And then
you stand up.
And then they all just look at each other, and they're like, oh no, what's he grabbing? It was all over there. It could be anything. Oh,
yeah, that is the dirty tactic that I will definitely use.
Yeah.
Oh man, yeah. But yeah, no, I think I'm definitely in, like, the camp of visual aid if I had to pick
between the two. But I think, like, if you ask any player, for the most part, they're gonna, in the long run, eventually pick visual aid over Theater of the Mind.
Yeah.
At least just for combat's sake.
Yeah.
You know?
But you don't want to be limited, and, like, you know, I think we can all agree that we are gluttons for D&D, and we'll take every morsel that it can offer in terms of, like, every option. Like, I don't want to be limited to just one. Exactly. I want to have, like, huge elements of both.
Yeah, exactly.
I will gladly use visual aid for combat, but outside of combat, I will pretty much never.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I think visual aids, when you're not in combat, I'm like, what are you doing? We're not even going to fight something out here? Come on.
Yeah, for sure. I think, actually, one of the ways that I found visual aids most useful in a way that I did not expect. So I'm a huge fan of D&D not being very combat centric, even though it's combat simulated with some other stuff that's developed over the years. I'm a huge fan of kind of detective work in my campaigns. And initially I did Theatre of the Mind, and that didn't work quite so well, I found, with my players.
Well, for, like,
they got what they wanted.
I feel like it's either, like, you didn't describe what they're supposed to find, like the clue they're supposed to find. You either didn't describe it well enough, so they missed it entirely, or it was way too obvious.
Or, like, as well, like, if you are describing something that to you is like a tidbit, and then people focus on, and that's where they go down a red herring that you haven't even planned for them to go down. So I found recently, like, I've started doing, like, if they're investigating someone and they're trying to have a conversation with them or whatever, I will build out the entire, like, house that they are, like, talking to someone in. In terms of like a little battle map type thing, and then make sure that there are certain elements that are worth looking into. But it is one of those things as well. Like, I did have a lot of people like, I'm going to sift through all the letters that are on this table. It's like, cool, I did put letters there, and I am, you know, there's one in there that I want you to read. And they literally went through and opened every single one.
Good luck finding it.
And I was like, cool, I have not planned what's in any of these except for one. And then they didn't open the one that I had planned for them to read. It was like a receipt for like, here's the murder weapon delivered to you, oh murdery McJohnson, from this from this store. Just like, cool, well, we're running out of time, so I'm just going to put that in my pocket.
My next and D&D then character coming to you next to all.
Murdery McJohnson.
Oh, what about my halfling insurance agent, Barbara Lightfoot Nielsen? That's the actual name of my insurance agent, by the way.
That's fantastic.
She does my car insurance. Her name is Barbara Lightfoot Nielsen.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
So of course I have to make a D&D character.
Oh, of course. I do feel like every time I hear an interesting name, I do tend to put those people in my campaigns. Like, God, I can't remember what it is. But like, certainly, like, you guys will have found this, I'm sure, when you get like comments on stuff and someone just has like a totally rad name. And just like, I mean, you weren't a gnome before, but now you are in my campaign. sorry, guy. Yes, that's your own like fault for having too many not. Vowels in that name. Like,
I don't know if you like gnomes or not, but now you're a gnome.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, man.
That's lovely. I do that all the time at work. I have to collect people's names sometimes, and I'll be like, wow, that's an interesting name. I think I'll remember that one.
Mm-hmm. But yeah.
The problem is I can't just pull out my phone and write it down because that's like kind of weird.
Yeah, totally creepy.
Especially even after they've left, I can't just be like, I need to write this guy's name down. Like, I have to just try to remember it until I'm off work.
Oh, man.
And then usually I forget. And sometimes I'm like, ooh, that name's real good. I got to write that down.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so I think we might have covered the pros and cons of Theater of the Mind and visual aids, respectively. Maybe. I think we hit most of our bullet points, at least.
I think largely, although I'm sorry on my part, at least, if I massively derailed when we were talking about fun. Stuff.
What's the point of a podcast generally, if you don't derail all the time, yeah, right?
For sure.
But yeah, so I think that's most of it. So, hey Ben.
Yeah, what's up?
Did you, just by chance, I'm not sure, did you know if the Traveler's Tips and Tales podcast has any other types of social media that people could find Traveler's Tips and Tales on?
Other types of social media? What could you possibly mean?
Like, I don't know, things like YouTube, perchance, Instagram, Facebook, maybe Twitter, just to list a few.
I mean, it certainly sounds like something that Traveler's Tips and Tales would have, but who could possibly know these things?
I suppose I do. Because Traveler's Tips and Tales is a YouTube channel that we upload all of our podcasts to on the same day that you hear them on any other podcast platform. So you can listen to them on YouTube if you prefer YouTube, or anything else if you prefer the other things. So why don't you go check that out if you'd like, and maybe subscribe or whatever. I don't know. You can also check out any memes or any other updates about the Travelers on Instagram, or at Travelers Tips and Tales on Instagram. And you can also find us on Facebook at Travelers Tips and Tales. We also have a Twitter at Tips Tales, a Tumblr page at Travelers Tips and Tales. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to check out our Patreon, maybe try and support us. You know, There's a lot of cool stuff on there. I'm kind of just blanking right now, so you could check out any other episode of the outro to find out what you can find there. It's a lot of like homebrew. You also get episodes early, access to our Discord, yada yada yada. you can find us on Patreon at Traveler's Tips and Tales.
Yeah, but also most importantly, don't forget to check out Arcane Forge.
Oh, of course.
Thank you.
And he has a Patreon, and his Patreon's really cool. And he. If you're an absolute G like me and you're willing to pay the money for it, you can even get him to talk to you for an hour every month. Or in my case, just save them up and then have him come on the podcast. We also have that.
Bribes.
Yes, we also have that as part of our Patreon. So go ahead and check that out. Also, shout out to our awesome Patreon, my mom, because she... is of the tier where we shout her out on our podcast.
Yeah, is there anything else you would like to shout out for yourself, Mr. Josh?
Mr. Josh, yes. I mean, I you guys have already said YouTube and Patreon. I'm also on Instagram and have started doing stuff on TikTok as well because I'm a filthy youth. I'm 30, but I'm down with the kids, yo, and I understand what a meme is and such. But yeah, so if you're on TikTok or Instagram or YouTube, you can find me in any of those places. And if you want to support me on Patreon, that will always be welcome, but is not obligatory. So thank you very much.
But yeah, so
well, as always, this has been awesome. And thank you for joining us, Josh.
Yeah, thanks for
interesting and entertaining episode of Traveler's Tips and Tales.
And this is what happens when Michael's gone.
We just ramble.
I think
for
we covered our point, right?
I was going to say, does he wrangle you guys? Like,
yeah, he's kind of, yeah.
We are the chaos, and he is the order. That is 100% correct.
And today he wasn't here, unfortunately.
So. Thank you all for joining us, and as always, adventure awaits.